Welcome to The Restoration of Samantha Jones, a non-linear memoir audio experience. Part audiobook, part podcast, all spiritual medicine. First, Samantha takes us through her life chapter by chapter with vulnerability, honesty, and gorgeous storytelling. From her childhood to today and everything in between, Samantha talks about the challenges we all face and uses her own journey of healing to light the darkness we all walk on. Samantha invites you to see yourself in her stories, and she invites you to feel inspired and explore your life out of the box and walk the walk with her, wildly embracing the freedom and life you deserve. This is The Restoration of Samantha Jones.
Hello, darlings. Welcome to The Restoration of Samantha Jones, a non-linear memoir audio experience. Today, I have invited Lindsay Mann, my Akashic Records consultant, to join us for three questions with SJ. Lindsay and I met in a human design class this past summer in 2020, and she has held my hand in some of the darkest moments of 2020 that I experienced. I invited her here so we could talk about what she does and how it's helped me. I also think she's super fly, and I want to get to know her a little bit more with three questions. I know that Lindsay's into permaculture, and she's into Reiki, and she lives in New York. But other than that, we're going to find out all kinds of interesting things today. Lindsay, are you ready to get going?
I am very ready. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad that you said yes. It's so good to do this. So you and I both prepared three specifically questions to ask of each other. Would you like to go first, or would you like me to go first?
Oh boy. I'm happy to go first. I really sat with the questions, and I think because you and I go so deep, they're pretty deep. So I guess it's interesting. It's like, do I want to hear the tone of your questions first? Or should I just dive in with mine? I don't know.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we start with just a little bit of getting to know who you are? Sure. And I will ask you, tell me how Akashic Records came to you, or how you came to it.
That's a really good one. When I first heard of the Akashic Records, I was really intimidated by it. Just the word Akashic sounded really big and intense. And I guess at the time, I just had the sense that it was this very profound kind of all-knowing perspective. And I had a couple of friends within my Reiki community who were learning the Akashic Records. They were training with Christina Cross, who would become my teacher. And once you do training, you practice for 30 days to flex that muscle. And you just try and practice on as many people as possible, giving free readings, just to get a sense of how you experience the Akashic Records. And two different friends, two different times, I think within a span of a year, were training. And so I had some readings with them while they were practicing. And at the end of, it's actually my Reiki master sister. At the end of a reading with her, I was getting ready to leave. And she looked at me and she said, "You're going to learn the Akashic Records. Like, you're going to work in the records." And I was like, "No, nope. And then what was so wild was I spent, I kind of tested listening to my body and listening to my heart space. So I spent like a couple of months following heart flutters and what made my heart excited. And one morning I woke up and I woke up really early. It was on a Saturday morning, and I just felt really excited and giddy. And I was looking on my phone and I saw that Christina Cross, Akashic Records teacher, of my two friends was training at Maha Rose down the street that weekend. And because of the excitement, like this little kid in me was just like, yes, 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 yes. I was like, okay, cool. So I signed up and I went, you know, it was up the street from me. I didn't live far from Maha Rose. And I jumped in, and it's interesting because there was this energy of like, you know, people have been waiting for this training for this weekend for so long. And, you know, I just like woke up one morning and was like, I'm going to learn the Akashic Records today. But what really tied it in was during the training session with my Reiki master sister. She had said she was getting visuals about me as a fish, school of fish, and fish being what was the information coming through from the records was that fish are the most intuitive creatures on the planet. And she was saying that I was one of these fish in the school of fish, and I can choose to jump in whenever I want. And at the end of the weekend in training with Christina Cross, the last thing she said to me at the end of the training was, like a fish to water.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, I'm meant to be here.
Yeah. Synchronicities are so good.
Yeah, they really are.
They're like little nuggets of like you're walking on a path and you like haven't had any food in a while, and it's like a little basket of chocolate to keep you going.
Oh yes. It really is. It really, and it never fails. It really does show up like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm, I love that story.
And I mean, the rest is history. I mean, I work in the records for everything now, and I have, you know, not only witnessed the profound healing with the people that I work with, who are so strong and so brave in the work that they're doing, but for my own personal, really deep-rooted, painful things in my life, the perspectives, what I've seen in my own Akashic records has profoundly supported me in overcoming some really, really hard times. So I know what it's done for me. I know what it's done for my clients, and it's such a beautiful resource.
Okay. I shouldn't say okay. I totally agree with you. I was just thinking of 14 different questions that I wanted
to ask next.
And so I'm not trying to rush you, and
I didn't hear it like that. I didn't even hear
good.
It.
I was like,
not at all.
Okay. One thing is, maybe I think that you would be really good at explaining to anyone listening who doesn't understand or has never heard of or doesn't know what it is we're talking about. Tell the average person or whatever, just tell us what it means.
Sure. Okay. So there are two descriptions of the Akashic records that I find very helpful in understanding them. One of them is the Akashic records are the vibrational archives of every soul's journey throughout all its incarnations. And that means it's all of your past lives, everything going on in your current present life, and all future possibilities. Now, when we're talking about the future is not set in stone, and we have free will. So when you're inquiring about the future, the information coming through is meeting your consciousness exactly where you're at in that moment. And it's coming from the highest perspective, and it's coming from the perspective of your soul. And so it may resonate, and you may choose to walk towards that thing, whatever it is that you're inquiring about the future, or you might sit with it for a few days and decide, you know, no, I'm not gonna do that. But the future is not set in stone. That's really important to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. Also, the messages coming through, the information coming through is not psychic channeling, it's spiritual channeling. So it's not coming from me. It's not coming from my consciousness, not my ego. And the second way that I love to explain the Akashic records is the electromagnetic imprint of everything that's ever happened. And what that means is we're talking about energy and atoms can't be destroyed. And so everything that has ever existed still exists in some form. It just transforms. So those are the general ways that I've described it. And I've even opened the Akashic records, and I had a client who was very uncomfortable and skeptical, and during her session was not understanding how I was receiving the information or what it was exactly. And the Akashic records gave me an explanation for her, which I would like to share with you as well.
Please.
Because it was beautiful. So as she was getting frustrated, they started to show me the top of a mountain. And on one side of the mountain, there was sun and light shining on one side. And on the other side of the mountain, there was no sun, there was shade. And there was this tiny little light at the apex, the top of the mountain, where the light and the dark met. And that is our light, our lightness, and our dark in perfect harmony. That is our soul's perspective. It is our shadow and our light in perfect harmony. That's who we are. And so they were emphasizing that the perspective coming from the Akashic records is in perfect balance of all of our lightness and all of our darkness.
That's so nice. I'm actually right now thinking of all the things that you've ever said to me through that lens now.
Yeah, because there's no judgment. There's no judgment in the Akashic records. You know, we've all been each other. We've all been everyone before. And so, you know, it's hard to accept this, but, you know, judgment is generally pointless because we have all at one time or another been in each other's shoes. So yeah, those tend to be the lessons you learn in the records.
Is that we have all had all the experiences of being each other.
Yeah, and trying, you know, to not be so hard on ourselves and hard on each other, because we are at different points in our journey, and we're all figuring out different things and growing in different ways, hopefully growing. but I think, you know, it's the idea that in all of our past lives, we've been each other. We've been masters, we've been slaves, we've been men, we've been women, we've been royalty, we've been animals, we've been trees, plants, we've been everything. So there's a higher understanding of that, which I think that can feel really overwhelming for people.
I have so many things I'm thinking about right now. Oh my gosh. I love some of the things that you said that I really like right there was the vibrational archives of all your lives.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. I believe in this, I have been spending a lot of time studying energy and how it works in our emotional body, in our physical body, and how it's all connected. And I'm no expert yet, but many times what I find is that I understand what's happening, but I don't have the words for it. And so I'm out here seeking different people it's different people that are speaking about things, and then I hear it and I'm like, there it is, that's the words I was looking for, mm-hmm. for the thing that I knew but didn't know how to explain.
oh yeah absolutely. I mean, I think the more you like delve into all this stuff, it's kind of like the less words mean.
Yes, and like for a writer and a storyteller, it's kind of uncomfortable for me. I'm often like, what is happening right now?
Yeah. You know, it's also interesting, you know, throughout history and eons of people working in the Akashic records, it's really common for people, you know, we're all creative, but, you know, people who, you know, define themselves as being creatives specifically work in the Akashic records. Like they'll open the records and do their work. They'll open the records and write. They'll open the records and sing.
Oh, really?
Totally. Absolutely.
Oh, you know, I want to try that now.
Absolutely. We'll do it sometime. I will teach you the opening prayer and the closing prayer. I think I should mention that too. I will teach you that because I think you will absolutely love. It like kicks you into a flow state like instantly. I will teach you how to do that because you would absolutely thrive in that space.
Ooh, that sounds good. I accept.
You got it.
That's your invitation.
Yes, yes. What was it? I was just going to say something and I forgot. It'll come back to me.
Okay, well, I'm going to let you ask me a question in one minute, but I have one more follow-up.
Yes, because please.
I have been learning a bunch of different modalities. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I'm finding is that I am very good at reading cards and tarot cards and oracle cards for other people. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to reading the energy for myself, I and I'm not the only one who is in this position. It's very often touted that you shouldn't read for yourself. Mm-hmm. And whenever I get to that point, I'm like, oh, this isn't working. And then I call somebody else who knows how to do it and get help. And they say, Samantha, you're not supposed to read for yourself. And then I'm like, I know, but sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I'm always hoping that it will. But I bring that up because you are talking about how you can open your own records. So why is it different for that than it is for the spiritual world with cards?
I think it depends. There are plenty of times. So I do open the records for myself a lot. To see things from a higher perspective and inquire about things I'm feeling stuck about, or just to open them and just sit in the energy. But I will say, if I am really having trouble with something, I'll either do a trade with another Akashic Records friend, or I will book a session with another Akashic Records consultant.
Yeah.
I think there are certain times where you need to receive support. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, for example, like if I'm feeling really like neurotic about something, I'm so in my head, in the opening prayer, there's a statement where we say, O Holy Spirit of God, protect me from all forms of self-centeredness and direct my attention to the work at hand. During a session, if I feel my ego or, you know, my life circumstances creeping into a reading, I will repeat that and it clicks your ego out of the reading. And so I'll open my records if I'm, you know, having a tough time, and I'll try that if I feel like I'm not getting the information that I need. And then again, if it's not working for me, I'll go and I'll work with another consultant to help me. I do think that it can be both. Like, yes, you can.
Yeah. So it's similar. It's the same kind of energy work there. Yeah. Okay. And I wasn't trying to like prove you wrong or anything. I just like to learn and understand which way I can go, because I, as you know, I love getting answers.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm often stuck over here in my own world, unable to get clarity. And it's a lot of my own doing, because what really does work more for me particularly, and I imagine other people too, but I like to speak in I statements, is when I stop seeking and stop pushing and stop resisting receiving, basically. Mm-hmm. And so if I just sit back and honestly, when I take a bath, that's really when I get a lot of my downloads. Mm-hmm. And when I'm in a home that doesn't have a bathtub, I struggle a little bit, to be honest.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's like my favorite place.
Yeah. Where I'm at right now, I have a shower and there's a hot tub, which I thought would be a great substitute. I'm like, oh great, it's a bath. It's ready all the time. Mm. And when I first got here, I went in it two, sometimes three times a day, and it was wonderful. But then after a while, when I started dropping in those tablets of chemicals to keep the water clean, it occurred to me that I'm just sitting in a pool full of chemicals, absorbing them through my clean skin and just healed body. And I was like, I'm not going to do that anymore. So I don't go in the hot tub anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a space to be really receptive.
Yeah.
And it relaxes your body and puts you, you know, when your body's in a receptive mode, then, you know, your mind, your spirit can also be in a receptive mode.
Yeah. I hope the next place that I live has a bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
At the top of the list.
Yeah, it's kind of a requirement. I went a fair amount of time without one. And especially when you're doing energy work, you need to drain that energy out of you. Mm-hmm. You have to do it on a regular basis. And so there were months on end where I wasn't living in a place where there was a bathtub, and there was a significant difference in my mm-hmm. balance. So yeah, I think it's important.
I agree. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, go for it.
Let's see what you, I should preface this for the listeners that when I said that Lindsay has seen me in some of my darkest moments, I mean, like, she's seen me at the bottom of a hole and in tears and wailing and on my knees begging for help. So I'm a little nervous right now what question she's going to ask.
No.
Not because I don't trust you anyway. I completely trust you, which is why we're here. I just am nervous because I've never done this before.
Sure, absolutely. No, I think they're there's one I think that they're great. You'll be fine.
Okay, cool.
So you want me to go first?
Yes. Well, I already went. I just asked you all those questions.
Oh my God. That's so funny. I'm sorry. I thought just a general inquiry about the record. Yes. Okay. So this is about your personal growth.
Okay.
So it's perfect.
Great.
And specifically, the individual perspective, peering into Samantha. Mm. The first question is, how have you grown in the past year?
Well, that is a massive question.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've actually been thinking about how much has happened the last year a lot recently, because it's February. Well, we're coming up on February. And last year in February, I was living in Croatia.
Mm.
And all of us, and I had just gone through the process of getting my visa. I was going to stay there and live. And I had it all set up in a place. And I was, you know, I had everything lined up to stay. I had brought all my things over from London. And then my angels were like, Samantha, it's time to go back to America. And I was like, yeah, I'm going for a visit in a couple of weeks. They're like, no, you're going to go there and not coming back. And I was like, what? And I was like, all right. You know, and I didn't know why they were saying it, but I was like, okay. And so I hastily packed up my things and put them in storage at my friend's house in Croatia, where they still are. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I'll go to Florida and visit my family. And then I'll go to California and find my people will be in California, I'm sure of it, is what I said. My people will be there, I'll find them, and I'll find a great place where everything is calm and serene. And I imagined like a little cottage and kind of like a carriage house in the back of somebody's house, or, you know, something like that, where I had my own four walls and my own ceiling. And then I got to California and I bought my car on March 6th, I remember. And my plan was to drive up the coast. I was in LA, and my plan was to drive up the coast all the way to Portland if I had to, and pick a place to live based on how I felt when I got there. You know, we look around and be like, yep, this is it. I'm going to find somewhere here, and then just find something. And I was going to do that. And I didn't have a lot of things because I only brought a couple suitcases. So it was pretty easy. And the first thing I did was buy myself a blender because I'm a smoothie addict. So me and my new Jeep and my blender, and I was driving up the coast, and I got to Santa Barbara and I saw my friend Amy. And then I got to Carmel, and that is when the stay in place order happened.
Mm.
And I got stuck.
Oh, wow.
And then I spent the next 6 months going from Airbnb to Airbnb, and really honestly, really struggling, and the density and the fear that was happening. And I did not know how to protect myself from outside energies before this happened. And I did not know how to release those energies in a, like, with intention. I knew how to cry and wail and just let them wildly escape me. Like, I learned that in treatment. Like, if I'm feeling something, to just let myself feel it. But I didn't know that I collect, I didn't know that as I collect energies throughout the day, that it's important for me to do an energetic and physical maintenance of releasing that energy, or else it builds up and builds up, and then you end up, you know, having little breakdowns or being depressed or things like that. So I learned a lot about that this year. That's probably the biggest thing that I learned. And funny enough, when you and I met, I was in Santa Cruz. And I had found a great house in Santa Cruz and was very excited because it had a little fenced in yard. It was on a corner lot and had a fenced in yard, so I could get outside and get my feet in the grass, which I knew I loved. And it was just a small little two bedroom house all for myself. But what I didn't know until after experiencing it, that being who I'm surrounded by also matters greatly. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting in the kitchen looking out the window, and I could count 7 houses that I could see, with each of them having no less than 4, upwards of 8 humans living in them at the same time. So it was, and they could all see into my space. And so it was basically like in a valley of homes, right? And I'm like in the middle, and they're all surrounding me. And as a projector who pulls in the energies of the world around me, that was not a great place for me to be. Mm-hmm. Even though it was a perfect house and it was a beautiful location, but I could feel the density of everybody, of the energy around me, but I still didn't know what to do about it. And I just, so then the next, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And every time I changed locations, it'd be okay for a minute and then it would go away. And I was having panic attacks. Mm-hmm. And I went, and anytime I would drive from one location to another, it was really hard too, because, you know, it was only supposed to be essential driving. And so the gas stations didn't have there was no facilities for me to pee anywhere.
Right.
And so I have literally peed all over California outside. Like, I'm so good at it now. I have a little trick where I open up the 2 doors. Like, I open up my driver's door and the door behind me. And I just, and it's, if you've ever peed off the edge of a boat, this is where I got this idea from. So I just sit on the edge of the car on the, where the foot rails are, and I just pee on the ground right there, and nobody can see me. And it's like peeing off the edge of a boat.
Oh yeah. Oh
yeah. So I've done that all over California, in Humboldt County, especially because it's so rural. There's nothing.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that was definitely a challenge.
Yeah. And, you know, interestingly enough, I also had driving PTSD while all this was happening.
Whoa, what's that?
Well, I'd gotten in a car accident in Croatia. Oh my and God. The time before that, because mostly I was not driving. When I lived in Indonesia, I had a scooter. And just before I left there to move to London, I got hit by a truck on my scooter. And I didn't know, I mean, it was an extremely traumatic experience, but I didn't know how to process the trauma out of me. And I honestly didn't even realize that I was carrying so much trauma from it. I just kept going, just kept moving forward. I was like, oh, I'm fine, I'll just keep going. And then I got to London, and I never drove in London because, you know, I don't drive in London. I took the bus or an Uber or a really nice London taxi, which is my favorite. But then I lived in Croatia, and my friend went out of town, and he said I could use his car while he was gone. And I was driving on the interstate, And they drive on the same side of the road that we do in America there, I think. Anyway, it wasn't hard to drive, but I got hit by another truck.
Oh my God.
And again, I didn't know that I was traumatized by it until I got back and was driving my own car in California. And I was like, I have driven this road 100 times. What is the matter with me? You know? And honestly, from the drive from LA to Santa Barbara was the worst. And I took back roads because I was so terrified. I couldn't drive on the PCH, and I've driven the PCH 100 times. So I didn't know what was going on. And I got to her house and I was so stressed, but I was driving for 45 minutes and then I would get out and I would scream and cry and shake, which now I know is getting rid of trauma, but I didn't know that then. I was just instinctively like just shaking and getting it out. Mm-hmm. And then I would get in the car and I would sit there and I would wait anywhere between 5 and 30 minutes, however long it would take for me to generate enough courage to do it again. And so I was driving in 45 minute increments where I would scream and shake and cry and pee on the side of the road and then go back in. And when I got to my friend's house in Santa Barbara and I woke up in the middle of the night, I was like, okay, you know what to do. Talk it out, write it out. So I just started writing to myself, you know, and then as I was writing, I discovered that I was afraid of driving. Wow. And then I looked up driving PTSD, and it's an actual thing after you've been in an accident. And I found the answer to be from a Geico website, actually. They said the way that you heal that is by going slow, which I tried to do even though I was driving for 5 and 6 hours at a time, but they suggested that you drive with somebody that you're comfortable with. They suggested you drive in your own neighborhood, like where you know, where you're comfortable, and do it in small little increments and like build back up to being able to drive again. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have that, any of those options available to me. So I just made it work. And the next day I was in a hotel. And it rained. So I stayed for 2 more days and I just drove around the hotel parking lot all day in small increments and would, you know, and back in and back out of different parking spots and just like practice. And that was really helpful.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is intense.
Yeah. So I would say that the biggest thing that I learned was the energetic work that needs to be done when something that you don't know is happening, you know, and something that you do know is happening. Cause I knew there was a pandemic, but I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's really, you know, it's all really relevant because in one form or another, everyone's going through something similar.
We're all in a collective trauma right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people are going to recognize how sensitive they are to energies once we slowly make our way back to being in public spaces and being together again.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to hit you. You're going to be like, whoa, it's going to be really intense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you know, because like I actually, when I was coming back from Croatia and, you know, re-entering American life, I was overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
It is loud and busy and fast and crowded and everybody's in a hurry and everybody's so like angry and frustrated almost all the time about everything.
Totally.
Especially when driving, since that was what we're talking about. And I remember when I got back to America, I was in Florida where I grew up and I was in my car that I had owned for 10 years. So I was comfortable and in my car and I was comfortable because I was in my hometown. And also South Florida is on a grid. So it's like straight this way or straight that way. Like it's not that hard. There's no mountains. There's no roundabouts. There's, you know, whatever. And so I was struggling to drive there, but it wasn't as pronounced because I was somewhere where I was already comfortable, sort of. Mm-hmm. But I remember driving from Delray Beach to West Palm for my cousin to do my hair. And I got there and I was like, oh, it's so horrible in America. I was like, it's so loud. Everything's just too much. And he's like, you have gotten so old. What is the matter with you?
That's so funny. That's how I felt when I left the city of Manhattan. I just couldn't do it anymore. All those reasons. I thought that was just New York. You're saying it's the whole country.
Oh, and then when I, and then another, the same thing happened when I went to visit my family in Tennessee, and I wasn't eating meat at the time. And my dad was like, let's go to Texas Roadhouse. I was like, okay, Dad. So we go there, and it was like, and it was not that different from the restaurants that I used to own, you know? So I'm not like picking on anybody. It was just my experience later. It was so many TVs and everything was playing, and there was music and televisions and lights and neon lights, and everything was so big and overproduced. And it was like this massive factory of noise and sound. And I was, and I hadn't craved a drink in ages, and just being in it, I was like, Dad, give me some of that beer. You know what I mean? Like it was too much.
Oh yeah.
And in that, I tell that story because in that moment I realized why we feel the need to use things outside of ourselves to comfort, because we immerse ourselves into discomfort all the time, because that's just what we do. And we have never considered that that's not good for us.
Mm-hmm. Our bodies are always trying to find balance in everything that we're doing throughout our day.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Totally. So would you like to try question number two?
Yes, I would. Oh, where are they? Over here.
And this one, I chose it because
You're going again?
No, to give to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh,
sorry. Yeah. No. What do you mean? To ask you a question.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Go for it. Is that how you want to? Is that okay?
That is absolutely fine. Yes, let's do it.
So this one I chose because it's something that I've been challenging myself to confront. Okay. I think, you know, with everything going on in the world, I think it's a, you know, potent time to kind of face our own projections and experiences and where our shadow side might come up. So this question is, in times where you've been triggered to the point of feeling hate, or triggering a reaction of potential violence, what was triggered in you? What lesson did you learn from that trigger?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question. What do you mean about triggered to violence?
So, I mean, that's the thing. I feel like with everything that's been going on, and with everyone being, you know, poked at and triggered into feelings of division, where in your own life,
yes, where we're excluding each other,
yeah, like where someone or people or group of people, whatever, triggered a perspective of, you know, clumping people together, or maybe it's an individual did something to you and you're like, I hate this person, right? So admitting to yourself, A, that I have been brought to that word, and B, if you were able to challenge that feeling, and what did you learn in the feelings of hate, or what did you learn about yourself in the feelings of violence?
That is a really good question. I'm going to ponder for just a moment.
Sure.
You know, I have to say that where my challenge in this is that I have not allowed myself to feel that. I have not allowed myself to feel hate. I have stopped myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's somewhere where I'm holding myself back from allowing myself to fully feel everything that I want to feel on earth. Because, you know, because we're taught to be, you know, good girls.
Oh, totally. Right?
And good girls don't feel hate. And so if I ever get close to that, I'm like, you know, and well, one, I know it's a trigger for, it's a notification system for me to back away from whatever it is that you know, maybe going to bring that up. I try not to go that way.
Totally.
I would love for you to answer that question yourself.
Sure. I mean, and the reason that I asked it is for exactly what you just said, and how we are conditioned to repress our emotions because they are bad, they are ugly, they are this, they are that. So when I confronted myself with my own feelings like that, it takes a lot for me to reach a feeling of hate. That's not really what it is. But in the times where, you know, something has triggered me to where in my mind I have a thought of violence, right? I sat with it and I dug into it. And the funny thing is, whenever I am presented with a type of person or an individual or a group of people, and my mind generalizes and says, oh, well, I hate that person, I hate those kinds of people, da 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 da. In my world, I am shown like an example of how that type of person or those type of people are supportive of me. It's like I'm immediately checked and challenged in my judgment. And it's happened my whole life, you know, growing up, like, oh, you know, girls are so two-faced and catty and blah, blah, blah. And then I'd be presented with a group of boys who are talking and being two-faced and catty. And right. I'm like, it's hysterical. And it's like, there's humor at the end of it, you know? But that being said, when I was triggered into feeling violent, and I think that's a really important thing that we need to get out of our system safely. Because if you do not, like in the animal world, you know, something attacks something, the other one fights back, and, you know, maybe it's to the death or whatever, but that release of screaming or reacting is so important for the body. And because we are so conditioned to be good and hold it in, and also we don't want to hurt people, you know? Turning that inwards is violence inwards.
Yeah.
And that creates depression.
Yes.
And anxiety and feeling of suicide.
Yes.
So it needs to be expressed. And when I really sat with my hate or my violence, so much humor came out. I was like, I would play with it. And I'm like, okay, well, what would you do to that person? And when it came out, it was hysterical. Like, it's like my violence is funny. It's humorous. It's like dark humor. And I think we need to explore those parts of ourselves so that it releases in a safe way.
You know, I would like to add to my answer, because as you were talking, I remembered the last time that I felt that I was, you know, in my full on hate. And it was when I was in treatment, and I learned there how to express that without sharing it with the world, you know, by screaming. And I do that all the time, honestly. And whenever I get super frustrated, if I'm in the car, I'll just let it rip. If I'm at home, I'll just let it rip. If there's other people around, I'll do it with some sort of way to muffle the sound, because it's really, you know, it's blood curdling, honestly. Because when I need to get the energy out, I fully embrace letting the energy out.
Absolutely.
In fact, there is on my Instagram, in my highlights, a little mini instructional of how to use your voice to release anger and frustration on this very point.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
And yeah, you know, and it's funny because Chelsea asked me the other day, you know, kind of a similar thing about, you know, is there any feeling that I struggle to express? And I was like, not anymore. Because when I was, my whole life, I was I was not invited to express myself, and I allowed other people to limit me. Mm. And once I went to treatment and started taking my power back and started focusing on my own sovereignty and my own power and my own independence, you know, I immediately embraced, how can I serve myself? How can I take care of myself? How can I process feelings without needing other people to help me?
Mm-hmm.
Because I had found that I didn't really have any other people to help me. So I had to learn how to do it myself. And mm-hmm. then also because the people I was surrounded with didn't know how to help me. And so when I did ask for help, I felt let down, even though that's not the case. It was just that they didn't know, but I felt like they didn't want to help me. Mm-hmm. And so I learned how to do all of these things in private almost.
Absolutely.
But I'll tell you a funny story if you want to hear one about some of the thoughts that I've had about hurting people.
Oh yeah, go for it.
A really funny one. There was this guy that before I went to treatment, this guy that I dated in Charleston, who was a con artist. And he was very handsome and very charming. And, you know, and also my level of self-esteem and self-worth was at the bottom when I met him, you know what I mean? And these people, they prey on that.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And I had a couple of years where I was getting preyed upon by these kind of people, and I was allowing it because I was terrified to be alone. And I was, you know, and I just was like, one of these days, some magical man, you know, and a white horse is going to come in and it's all going to be better. And mm-hmm. I thought this was him.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found out all the things about him that I found out, including him stealing all of my jewelry and selling it, mm. including him taking my corporate credit cards and using them, wow. including, you know, where places where he said he was going to be and just all these different things. And I was so, so angry. And I had this dream that I daydreamed for months on end, where I took, because at his house, he had a house and a boat and a truck. And like at the time, and I bring that up because at the time, like that was like my standard. I was like, he has a house and a boat. He's great, Dad. Mm. You know, like that was all I needed. And so he also had dogs that I wanted to take the Aww. Big, huge bag full of dog food and put it in his washer and turn it on and let the dog food ruin the washing machine. And then I was going to take the gas can that was by the grill outside and write in the lawn something and light it on fire.
Cool. That's beautiful.
That's beautiful, isn't it? I was going to light it on, this is all my dreams. And then I was going to put sugar in his gas tank of his car.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then there was, I didn't get to the boat because, and like, honestly, in my mind, I was so angry and I was so resentful and I was just so, so much in pain. I was like planning it like in my head over and over again. I was like, okay, you're going to have like a half an hour and you can go here and then here. And I had like the whole thing, because I'm a projector, you know, I lead to plan efficiency. I had it all planned out. Like it was going to just go off like a hitch.
I love it. I love it. How funny is that though?
And I never did it. And in fact, one of my, there was a man that I dated and who's Australian. Oh, I loved him so much. And I was trying to explain what a Scorpio woman is like. And I was Google it. And he Googled it and we're sitting there on FaceTime and he said, oh, so you're the kind of girl that's going to key my car. And I said, you know what? I'm the kind of girl who's going to think about keying your car. I'm not going to do it. But yeah, my sister, but the my other Scorpio sisters, you got to watch out for those girls.
Oh, it's so true. It's so true. Yeah.
But as we evolve, we let go of those things.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's important to play it out in your head and like let it exist. you know, mm-hmm. versus like, oh no, I can't think those terrible thoughts. It's like, no, you can think terrible thoughts.
Yes, you can. And you, and it, you know, because I have said so many times in the past couple of weeks, even, that feelings are like children and they are mm-hmm. meant to be seen and meant to be heard, and they will persist until they are. So we might as well, instead of fighting fear or fighting hate or fighting these things that we're afraid to feel, is just allow them to have a moment. And to, and they, I believe they bring us a message, right? Mm-hmm. So you allow them to have the moment. And then once you feel it, then you can, then you, I have actually felt them leave my body. And then mm-hmm. all of a sudden I'm like, oh, now I know what the answer is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It has to come up. Everything has to come up and be released. Got to come up. It comes up to come out.
Yes.
And then we have to let it go versus, oh, this thing came up. And then you replay, you obsessively replay the story. It's like, yes. No. It came up. Like, it came up. Let it go.
Yes. And so, okay, for the listeners, besides screaming, right, into a pillow, or if you are by yourself, blood curdling out to the air, what are some other things that we can do to release these feelings so they're not, so they don't ruminate in our minds and in our hearts?
I mean, I definitely think writing. Mm-hmm. Writing, you can write in a journal, put it aside. You can write, you can burn it. You can write, mm-hmm. you can flush it. Mm-hmm. I think journaling has always saved my life throughout everything. I've got journals on journals on journals.
I'm sitting next to a pile of three currently.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, right here.
You gotta get it out. I mean, you can also sing, you can dance, you can write poetry, or you can write songs. Being creative, it mm-hmm. just has to move. Yeah. I mean, you could be super, super angry and then, you know, start working in your garden outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just, it's gotta come out. It's just movement, you know, you gotta move it.
Movement. Yes. Mm-hmm. And each person, each human is going to have something different that resonates with their emotional body and their physical body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, see, for me, the guttural release that I use with my voice, I'm just going to do it right now. It kind of sounds like this. Like that, mm-hmm. right? And yeah. I just get it out. And I just do that again and again and again. And I just did it kind of late right there, but I wanted y'all to hear that. But I just do that again and again. And then after a while, I'm like, almost like giddy because I've released all this anger and frustration.
Yeah.
And so like, that's something we can do that doesn't require, because sometimes even as a writer, right? Even as somebody who loves the power of words, sometimes I don't have the energy to write.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm feeling. And mm-hmm. so I like to, you know, bring up that you don't have to use your brain all the time. You know, mm-hmm. it can be something as simple as what I said. It could be swimming. It could be jumping on a trampoline. It could be jumping rope. It could be anything at all that resonates with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of anything else. If there's anything I've forgotten, dancing is a good one. You don't have to think for that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and it's just like, you're right. Like, everyone's different and different mm-hmm. experiences call for different, you know, releases. And yeah. I think just kind of checking in with yourself and being like, okay, what do I need right
yeah.
now? What do I need
yeah.
to do right now?
Yeah. So when you have a lot of energy, you can do writing and you can do singing and, you know, different things like that. When you have low energy, you can do this. That's why it's important to have a bunch of different tools in your toolbox. So mm-hmm. you can serve yourself depending on wherever you are. Just meet yourself where you are and don't try to force yourself into doing one thing over another. And this is, you know, one of the things I see often, you know, is people, you know, like going to the gym, right? That's something that people do on a regular basis in a consistent way that helps them release the energies. Mm-hmm. And then, but then at the same time, that can sometimes be a detriment because you're like, oh, I can't get to the gym. I can't do this. But mm-hmm. you can do it. You just have to choose a different medicine that day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's important to remember that the consistency in serving ourselves is in the consistency of showing up, not necessarily the consistency of doing the same exact thing every day.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking as you were speaking that I think also it's important to just connect with people and communicate with people and have a listening ear and get things out within your community, having a solid support system. Because I think, you know, we try and do everything on our own. Mm-hmm. We try and do so much, you know, to be strong and privately by ourselves. But at the end of the day, we need each other. Mm-hmm. And we need connection, and just to have someone, you know, with you to just listen and let you speak, or just they understand, like, I hear you, I understand, and that everything's going to be okay, you know? So I think I think it enhances the experience when you are able to bond and connect with other people who are experiencing maybe something similar.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Mm-hmm. I really couldn't agree more. It's so important to be heard and, mm-hmm. and then, you know, and to give each other the gift of holding space for whatever mm-hmm. it is that you're going through. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I'm actually, you know, I'm 5 years into my awakening and, restoration, but I want to bring it up only because I know there's other people out there who feel the same way that I used to feel, is no one wants to hear me talk. No one can do this for me. Mm. And if you're in that spot, I learned to talk to myself. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. the beauty in that is it sounds kind of sad. You're like, oh, I'm talking to yourself, but it only mm-hmm. sounds sad because the world has programmed us to think that solitude is loneliness, for sure. Right. And that's not true.
Right.
We can be alone and not lonely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And when I'm alone and I'm not lonely and I'm talking to myself, what I'm doing is giving myself the gift of being my own best friend. Mm-hmm. And I carry me everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's something important, I think, to note.
Yeah, that relationship has to be solid. For sure. I mean, I think if you love your own company, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And not to love your own company so much that you isolate from other people.
Yeah.
But I think that's a foundational thing. A lot of people can't sit with themselves, and there's a reason. It's like, you really got to sit with, if you feel like you can't sit with yourself or be alone with your thoughts, something's really got to come up for you.
Well, mm-hmm. a lot of people have never tried to do it before. Mm-hmm. And when you first try to do it, it's just like you were saying before, you said you had to strengthen the muscle to grow your experience with the Akashic Records. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's the same way when you are creating a relationship to yourself, right? It's the same as creating a relationship to any human, right? You're a human. And if you're creating one with yourself, you find something that you like to do with yourself. Mm-hmm. And then you do that thing, and you do that as much as you want, and you give yourself that relationship to yourself with doing whatever it is, whether it's writing or reading or going on a bike ride or taking a drive or cooking or doing yoga or anything at all that you enjoy doing with yourself. You can start there, and then you're like, okay, this is really good. What else would we like to do? Mm-hmm. And then you can expand the relationship with yourself a little bit at a time. We see these things online and it's like, oh, learn to love yourself, you know, but there's a pressure with that it feels like, or when they say fall in love with yourself, right? And the image that we get of falling in love is like, it's fast and it's quick and it's magical and it's, you know, it's all full of joy, but that's not how it works. That's not how true, real, healthy relationships work, whether it's with you or another human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Hmm. Okay. You know, I want to ask you a question now. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah. Please. No, go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead. Okay. You know, what I want to ask you is, you have seen so many people in pain. If you could heal one thing in humanity, what would you pick?
Oof. It's probably the reason I do the work that I do. For sure, mental health, mental and emotional health. And I'm saying that because, you know, just such a deep-rooted wound in my life, and every client that comes to me experiences the same thing. It's a family member or a lover throughout their life, and their mental and emotional instability wreaked havoc on their life. There's a ripple effect. And I feel like a lot of the work I'm doing is like picking up the pieces. But those are cycles, you know, those are cycles bred into generation after generation after generation. So yeah, that's a weighted thing, because there is so much mental illness. There is so much mental and emotional instability in our world. And I think, you know, we had that quite blaringly obvious in our politics. And, you know, there's it's a very frustrating thing. Mm-hmm. But I would say that very specifically.
I like it.
Would you like me to, this is fun, my third question for you?
Yeah.
It's a little manifesty.
Oh, okay.
I like to take
manifest is the word of the year, apparently. Let's do it.
I like to take opportunities to speak into existence what we want.
Yes.
So my question for you is, what is your greatest desire right now?
Honestly, to be, well, I don't know if I should let the words rip or should I tame them a bit.
Let them rip.
I want to be touched by a Viking sex god. I have not been kissed in a very long time. And it's starting to get to me hardcore. I'll be honest, I was on Tinder last night trying to see if I could drum up some attention. And I got some attention, but I had to drop my age range because I'm on an island that's very low in count of people. And I got down and I got the attention of a couple young men, and then come to find out the two I was talking to were roommates.
Wow.
And they lived on a farm in a bus. And I was like, and I have no judgment on that. I really don't, because it was a cool bus, right? But like, I was like, is this really where you want to go? And I was like, no, it's really not. It stopped.
Totally.
I was like, oh my God, it was so funny. They were like the yin and yang to each other. One of them was like super spiritual and, you know, extremely healthy. And the other one was talking about eating ass and had a nose piercing. And I, you know, the two sides of me, I was torn already. And I was like, I don't know which way to go. And I was like, and then it was like 10 o'clock and I was like, I'm done, I'm out. And I just released both conversations.
That's funny. I mean, could have been both.
You know, that occurred to me for a moment. It did. When the eating ass guy said that they were in the same room, I thought, and then I was like, I do not have the emotional energy for that.
If I had
like a 3-day weekend, I could maybe entertain that situation. But you know, for me to have a sexual encounter with somebody I don't know is like a 48-hour commitment. It's the however many hours with them and then that many hours afterwards to release them from my existence.
Oh, I love that. It's a good answer.
Okay, so you want your Viking. You want your Viking to devour you.
Oh my gosh. You know what? I'm gonna read you something. I'm gonna pull it up. This is really funny. Okay. This is what I'm considering changing my dating profile to. Okay, this is what I was thinking about writing. Nomadic storyteller who thrives on equal parts delicious connection and solitude, looking for a passionate healer / artist, Viking sex god who makes me laugh and loves to read and have many adventures and eats delicious things.
You just did it. Oh my God, that's beautiful. And so it is.
And so it is.
And so it is. And so it is. Wow. And I love how specific you got.
Okay.
Let me know when he shows up.
Don't worry, the heavens will hear me screaming. Oh, it's been so long since I've had a real connection. You know what I mean? Like, and to be honest, actually, this is something that I have talked about on dates before. You know, people ask each other things like, you know, when's the last time you were in love and what's the last relationship, things like that. You know, I have gone through such a massive change in my energy and who I am and what I do and what I choose that I'm basically a whole new person. And as the human I am right now, I have never been in love. I have never been in a relationship. And one of the last men that I was dating lightly, and I mean dating as in we went on one date and didn't even kiss, like, so we met, and you know, he asked me what kind of girlfriend am I, and I was like, fuck if I know, give me a shot, I don't know. I didn't want him to give me a shot, I'm just saying, like, I literally just don't know how to answer that but then I started thinking about, okay, well, what kind of girlfriend are you to yourself? And I was like, well, I'm a damn good girlfriend. I make great food. I go on adventures. I know how to take care of myself, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think I know that I'm going to be a good partner when my Viking sex god comes home to roost. Because I have made this home, and by home, and this brings back the whole analogy of my show, The Restoration of Samantha Jones. I have restored my home, and it is a beautiful home inside and outside, and it has all the things that I need and room for someone else to come and join me in a really healthy, conscious relationship.
Beautiful.
Thank you for allowing me to speak those words.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You see me, I've got the head moving and everything on that. I did. I'm sitting up straight. I'm like, yeah, this is it. Now I want you to answer that question. You're good with the questions.
It's funny because I think it's similar. It's similar. I mean, I want my partner. I'm in a similar place where I have purged the unhealthy, lingering toxicity from previous relationships. And I've worked through, you know, taking responsibility of participating in them and all of that. And I'm finally feeling almost ready for a relationship, but I'm still, and this circles back to kind of like my passion towards mental and emotional wellness, because my relationships scared me away from wanting relationships. Like, scared me to the point where I was afraid of people. And so I've had to work really hard at like dipping my toe in the water. First of all, trusting myself that I know what's right for me and what's not right for me, but also learning to be discerning of who I let into my life. And I have learned that lesson very, very hard, more than once. So for me, I want a partner who sees me, who hears me, who might want to get into talking about all this crazy shit that I do, or might just listen, be open-minded to it.
Exactly.
But I want to feel worshipped and I want to feel protected. I want to feel safe and supported and adored. And so I've been.
Okay, I'm adding that to my list too. Angels, everything yes. that she just said, tack that yes. on to what I just said.
Exactly. You know, I think we all want the same thing. We all want the same thing. And I, you know, I want the partnership to be, I can let my man be a man and he can let me be a woman.
Yes, but then also the beauty of sometimes needing to swap masculine and feminine roles, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was reading the other day about this very thing. I don't know how I found this woman, but I follow her. She lives in Jamaica and she is pregnant and she and her husband already have children. And she was talking about what a cool juxtaposition she was in at the moment, because she is in this very feminine state of holding a baby, you know, carrying a pregnancy. But what was happening in her home was that her husband was being the one who was nurturing and feeding the children they already had and taking care of the more feminine traditional things, where she was carrying the baby, but she was doing the more masculine things of the working and the deciding and making decisions and creating boundaries and a container for them to be loving in. And I just found that so empowering and so inspiring, because I am in my own journey learning finally to navigate being able to use both sides of myself, my masculine energy, which I grew up really strong in, and now my feminine energy, which is new to me, and balancing those two and going back and forth. And I would love to meet a man who is also learning that same thing. And not even just a man, to meet lots and lots of humans. Like, we're all meant to be doing that, to grow with in community and in relationships, so we can all learn to, you know, be balanced in that way. And I think that's what you were talking about with the mental health.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's a big part of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that. Let's.
We add that to the list too. Totally. Everything I just said, you just put that on both of our lists.
and so it is.
I think that we have time for a little bit more if you're available.
Absolutely, I'm available.
Okay, good. Because I want to talk a little bit, and I don't know if you have a question ready for this or not, but one of the things I want to talk about is either the past life that you opened with me, where I found out about the drowning, or the stuff with my mom. Which one do you like more?
Oh, they're both so good.
I know they are.
Oh, they're both so good. And they're just so good because, like, you're so open and expressive and willing to do the work. And that's why those sessions were so big and profound, and everything came through so fully. Oh my goodness. I don't know. I mean, I would say,
why don't you tell us one of those stories, whichever one you like, and I'll just jump in when it's time.
I think the drowning one is kind of coming to the forefront more.
Okay.
Just currently, but
that's a good one. Let's do it. Cause that involves all the men in my life, basically.
Yeah. I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I had the visual and just kind of shared it. But it was something like you were someone tied, or a weight or an anchor or something was tied to your ankle, and you were thrown off of a boat.
Okay. Actually, what it was I was wrapped, my upper body was wrapped in chains. And I was drowned in the ocean while looking up at my lover and my family who were drowning me.
Is that what it was?
Yes.
Yes. I'm glad you remember. I mean, here's the thing.
Like, I can't unremember.
No, absolutely. No, with all the sessions, because, like, I'm just supposed to release them and not attach to them at all.
Yeah. And so it's also, like, you do this all the time. You can't be expected to remember everybody's details.
But I remember the feeling. I had the feeling that you experienced when you were drowning and looking up.
Yeah.
And couldn't do anything. Oh God, it was so So rough.
Okay, so listeners, what's happening, what we're talking about is one of the early times that Lindsay opened my records, I was drowning in real life here on this planet. And she opened up the records, and was this the first one?
It might have been.
It was the first time, because and how I tell this story is this image was standing at the door of the thing. And as soon as you opened up the doors, it fell in. Like, it fell into us, and it was just like ready, waiting for me to pick it up and to understand what was going on. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was like standing at the door, and as soon as you open it, they was like, hey, we're here, look at this. Totally. And so what happened from my side was Lindsay told me the story about that, you interpreted the story of one of my past lives being that I was wrapped in chains and drowned by my lover and my family. And as soon as the words came out of her mouth, I was immediately transported back into that time and know it to be true. Mm. Now, another fascinating thing about, there's a couple fascinating things about this, but the one I love the most is that honestly, on the top of both of my shoulders, my whole life, there were these two spots that were so sensitive to touch. They were like bruises that you couldn't see, but they were always there. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I released this story, the bruises, what they were from was from the past life of my lover grabbing me. They were his thumbprints on my shoulders, mm-hmm. where they held me while they wrapped me in chains, mm-hmm. and then drowned me. And now, as soon as I released that story from my release the pain of it, the bruises, the thumbprints were gone.
Wow.
And I carried them my entire life, 44 years. Mm-hmm. And then they were just gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's so cool.
It's like the story, the experience has to just come up for your awareness to know where it comes from, and then you mm-hmm. can let it go.
Yeah. Yep. And then what happened after, what else happened that day when I learned about this was, this will take just a second for me to tell you guys that I grew up in South Florida, and we had a pool in my backyard, in all of my backyards, everywhere we lived, we had a pool. But specifically talking about before I was 10 years old, and my dad is the oldest of six boys, and my mom has three brothers. And so I grew up with eight uncles, and we were basically the center, you know, because my parents were both the oldest, and I was the first grandchild. So for the first 7 years of my life, it was just me and them and all my uncles, and grandparents would come over. And so I was like a toy for the uncles, and I got pushed into the pool a lot. Mm. And I got thrown from one end of the pool to the other. And it was really, half of me was very excited to be getting the attention of my father and his brothers. And the other half of me was scared to death that I was going to drown, mm-hmm. and didn't know why, because I'm a strong swimmer, but mm-hmm. I always preferred to be in the pool with nobody else around, and I didn't know why. And mm-hmm. my whole life, anytime I got within 3 feet of the edge of any body of water, I would literally be looking behind me for who was going to push me in. And terrified and carrying this huge resentment towards my father and my uncles that they had given me this trauma and that it was their fault for torturing me. Now, they acerbated it, but I was born with that fear. I brought it with me from a previous life. Mm-hmm. And so it was fascinating, because I never could understand why, when it was like me and my little friends, I was fine in the pool. But then anytime anybody that I was related to, or mm-hmm. who I was in a romantic relationship with, like mm-hmm. I would get, I mean, I would turn into a angry and terrified little child mm-hmm. within seconds. Mm-hmm. And the thing that was so crazy was I love swimming and I love being in water. So it was like torture my whole life. And even as a restaurant owner, we used to, every summer we would close and one day of the summer and have a party for the staff. And we went to the lake and we went to a hotel one time and had a pool party. And, you know, because I was the matriarch, they loved to push me in, right? They loved to torture me. And I would just get so mad at them. and they just didn't understand why, and neither did I. And it was always just such an uncomfortable moment because I would cry like a child, even as a grown-up, and I didn't understand. And if I was on a boat and got pushed into a lake, and there's no reason for me to cry, I can swim. I am an incredibly strong swimmer. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to explain all that because I had so much resentment and so much pain that was brought in. And then by opening the Akashic Records and understanding this, I understood that whole relationship with my uncles and my father and the water. And then it also helped me to understand my relationship with my ex-husband, because I believe it's the same soul that we were in the both lifetimes together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I think I remember also, like, there was a symbolism with the water and drowning in the water being equivalent to drowning in emotions,
mm-hmm.
being overwhelmed by emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was a big
one. There was that too. And that was actually the first layer that we took off of that story, was that I was because at the time I was in Carmel for the second run, and the house I was in was a beautiful home, but there was construction on both sides that was relentless, and I was being tortured because I couldn't leave the house because there was a stay in place order.
Oh.
But there was construction on both sides of me
all
day from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day. And when I called the owner to tell her I wanted to leave, she would not give me my money back.
Oh, wow.
And it was really yucky. So I should have left, but I just stayed there because it was really expensive and I felt like I couldn't spend more money. I was drowning. And that actually, you know, to be honest, that month there is so incredibly discomfort. I was living in so much discomfort. I couldn't leave my house, you know, and there was all this noise and it was just constant. And like everything in that house broke at one point or another, the dishwasher, the television, the shower, the toilet, the bathtub. I mean, literally everything in that house broke within a month. And it was just awful. But what also happened was I started opening my records with Lindsay, and I had I had a session with Shaman Durek. And that is when I was taught how to protect myself from outside energies coming into my field.
Have you shared that with your listeners? Is that?
I have, but I will do it again.
Yeah, do it again.
We'll do it again. Yes, I have it written down. Because there's a lot of words and I like to write it down. So what I do is I get my feet in the grass and, if I can't get my feet in the grass, I get my hand on a tree. Mm-hmm. And then I speak my gratitude and I say what I'm thankful for. And that's a little thing that I just added. But what Shaman taught me was that we have the power. We are, as he would say on his show, be your own damn guru. And that this is also what I have been touting since the very first moments I started speaking about what is important is the relationship to self, taking care of who you are, being your own sovereign person, and knowing what you need to do to protect and take care of yourself. And within that note, what I do, and this is all words he gave me, but you speak in a commanding way to your body and you say, I want you to ground yourself to the earth three layers deep. Now you can change however many layers it is. Sometimes I will say, I want you to ground yourself to the earth. I want you to ground yourself all the way to the center of the earth. I want you to ride the earth. That's what I say to myself. And then I say, put a force field around your body and only allow unconditional love in and only allow unconditional love out. Put a triple layer force field around your body. This is what I say because I'm very sensitive and I don't want any of it in. And then I add to it, Archangel Michael, angel of protection, please protect me. Archangel Haniel, I call upon you to increase my clarity and connection to the angels. And then the next thing that Shaman Jorette gave me is what you do is you say, bring the fire out of your heart with unconditional love. Increase inside the force field, self-love, unconditional love, and deep relaxation. And then in there, he gave me a bunch of other things. Oh, you can also say, this one's a nice one. Activate the youth and vitality in your epidermis. Soften your body and skin. And when I do that, it almost looks like I've had a little Botox. Yeah. So I do that. And, and there's a couple of things I say in there that are not relevant. So I'll skip those. But how I close it out, and this is my morning ritual. I do this every day. I close it out and I say, I give the true divine beloved permission to guide me into the fulfillment of my sacred gifts, talents, and destiny. May all that was originally intended for me be released into being and protected through divine protection, grace, and my own free will. So be it.
I love this so much, and I am inspired. I feel like I really need to implement a morning ritual like that as well. That's beautiful, Samantha. I love that.
It's really good. You know, when going to, and I back to, you know, the beginning of all of this, start how you start your day, you know, is the, we have control over what we experience. And when, you know, like we were just put, you know, you put in your order with the universe. I just put in my order for a Viking sex god. And every morning you put in order with the universe and you say, I'm grateful for this. Protect me like this. This is what I'm going to do with unconditional love. I'm only allowing unconditional love. And then you go out there and just watch how the world just falls in place for you. It's pretty exciting.
Very true.
You have to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. I have one more question for you and then we'll close it up.
Sure.
Is that all right?
Let's see. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I want to know, oh, this is a good one. That's kind of on the same note. What ritual did you use to not love that you do now love?
Huh.
If there's any.
I'm pretty ritualistic. Let's see.
Like, was there anything that you were just like, oh God, I just don't even want to do that. And like, now you can't live without it.
That's really hard. And actually now that I'm thinking about it, I believe I used to have more rituals than I do now. So I'm not even sure how to answer that.
Well, tell us what your favorite ritual is.
It's probably the bath.
What does it look like for you? What do you do exactly?
Very, very simple. I either use Himalayan sea salt, some form of sea salt, fill up the bath with hot water, and I'll lay in it for about 20 minutes and meditate. Maybe I'll have candles around the tub, just sit there in silence. And as I'm meditating, and usually when you're meditating, things come up. So I let what's coming up be brought to my awareness. And then when I'm done with the bath, I'll hit the drain and allow it to drain. And I sit in the tub until all of the water has drained out. And as the water is draining out, that release is being placed into the water and down the drain. So I'm like detoxing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the full mind, body, spirit, allowing for all of that that needs to be released to go down the drain.
Mm.
So that's, you know, that's one of the main things that I kind of like can't live without.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a ritual for when you need to feel more empowered? Like you're about to do something that is hard or makes you uncomfortable. Do you have anything that you do there?
And music. It's funny. I lean towards Rage Against the Machine.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of my empowerment. Mm-hmm. Rage Against the Machine hits me in a spot where like when I was a teenager, I was just this badass, I'd say bitch. I was a bitch. And I had this really powerful energy.
Were you angry?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I also just like saw through people. And I think I would, you know, the things I would say were very like raw. And I think people would always be surprised that I was paying that much attention to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I, you know, wasn't like the greatest thing. I'd probably look back and say that I was a little bit of a bully. I was really nice. I was like a role model. I was so good in school. I had a lot of friends. I was very popular, but there was this part of me, there was humor in it though. You know, it wasn't completely like mean. It was mm-hmm. usually like teasing someone.
Mm-hmm.
But that was me using my throat chakra.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that has gone away as I've gotten older. And so when I'm listening to something like Rage Against the Machine, it kind of like is cathartic for me in that way. And it gets me like pumped up and like
you can almost like release through their release.
Yeah. Yeah.
You it, can like, channel I, it.
Yeah. It's like, it's very aligned. I think it's like, it's very aligned. What the music, the voice, you know, all of that is just very aligned with, I think, a part of me that is like really, really me that doesn't get a lot of airtime.
Yeah. Well, it sounds to me like that part of, based on everything we've talked on this show, I think that part of you is asking for your attention right now, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
Like that was the first thing you started with.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I it's funny. I mean, like this past week has been some like really deep reflecting on that, and that mm-hmm. there are some parts of me that need to be unleashed.
Can we talk about that? What are you gonna do to let her out? Let the little angry Lindsay out? She needs to scream and yell and sing.
Yeah, I do.
Something.
I'm not really sure like how to, you know, where to give myself that space, how to give myself that space to do that, but I'm working on it, you know, and I'm ruminating in it, but mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you don't live alone, you feel like you can't express that in your own home?
Oh, I live alone now.
Oh, mm-hmm. You do?
Yeah, I moved out, I got my place, oh. I got my place. Yeah, no, I could not do that anymore.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, the other thing is, you know, my apartment, there's thin walls, so I probably wouldn't go nuts about anything. But like in my car, you know, like I'll scream things out, I'll sing things out, I'll go on nice little drives and road trips. And, you know, driving is a very meditative experience. So actually the last time I screamed was last week and it was in my car. And that was probably the first time I really, really screamed in a long time.
Yeah.
I was driving and I was just like, you know, yeah, I had to get some stuff out. And I was like, that felt great.
It feels so good. It's like an energetic orgasm.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to get that throat chakra. I mean, I got to, you know, take my own advice because I struggle with that, but throat chakra is really important. We do.
Yeah. I know. And that's why I just want to reiterate one more time. The consistency is showing up for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just remember that, you know, because we all can give ourselves a little bit more grace
mm-hmm.
and understanding that, you know, we're not meant to be exactly the same every day, and to give ourselves permission to navigate all the different energies that come from within and from without.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. This was so much fun. I like talking with you. You're so
interesting. Me too. We should do it more often. I love it. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, we're both so, like, everything's on the table. We're both so open. Like,
yeah,
thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me to chat with you.
You know what song is running through my head right now?
What you got?
It's that song that I gave you a couple months ago by Morphine. Sharks control these waters. Don't let your fingers dangle in the water. Do you remember that song?
I do. Yeah, that's just so funny. A little context. I have shark tattoos. I love sharks. That's funny that was coming through for you. I feel like that's my like power spirit animal.
It is too.
That's a good song. I was really appreciative when you sent that to me.
It's also a good song to be like slightly angry with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the sharks are bubbling underneath the surface.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Shark. Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. We're gonna have one more bonus question because this is really good because I totally forgot about this. This is what we're talking about. We're gonna do one more. Is what spirit animals have visited you lately?
Oof. Lately.
Oof. Yeah. Like who's seen you recently?
Who's around me?
Because I know you used to have a squirrel that came by a while.
Yeah, that was reminding me to be playful. Wolves are back.
Mm. And wolves, what do they tell you?
Oh, it's about finding your people.
Oh, your pack.
So when wolves, my pack, and like when you howl into the sky, and I've seen this for people's Akashic Records readings all the time when they're trying to find their peoples. There's a wolf howling into the sky and everyone's howling and expressing themselves, you know, their truth. And by expressing your truth, you find your people.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like wolves very recently came back. Crows is another one. Oh my God, hawks.
Ooh. Hawks mean powerful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that, yeah, I guess it's more birds lately. So my most recent encounters have been hawks and a crane.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And did you look up what the crane meant?
I did. And it was around some struggles I was having about like love and relationships.
Mm.
And what it said, I'll read it to you. A crane symbolizes freedom, intelligence, honor, good fortune, royalty, happiness, balance, prestige, and maternal love.
Mm.
Aided by the abilities to walk, fly, and swim, it depicts its association with the elements of water, emotion, and feminine mystique. While living up to 60 years, it stands for romance, long-lasting marriage, and longevity.
Mm.
A crane crossing your path is a reminder to remain patient till all problems subside, to move ahead with knowledge and clarity. So
that's a lovely message.
That's the one that I needed to hear because my neuroses around relationships and love and fear of people was triggered. And so that was saying, wait until the neuroses subsides before doing anything. So right now,
because to be sovereign and to call in the Viking sex gods, we have to take care of ourselves first and not have what's the word I'm looking for? Like anyway, I think you know what I mean.
Subconscious blocks. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
Blocks. Yes, exactly. That's what I was saying.
You want something, but then you're deeply afraid of it. So you're going to push it away.
So. Yeah, we resist.
We do.
We resist. And yeah, it's funny because I'm working on receiving. That's something that is doesn't come as easily to me as giving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm working on receiving. I have been recently visited by grasshoppers.
Ooh.
And butterflies.
Ooh.
Which are similar in their message.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also before that, a cow came. And that was actually helping me with my do I eat animals or not, or do I not eat animals question?
Mm, mm.
Fascinating. I love this.
I love it. Yeah, that's beautiful. Lindsay,
I want to say thank you again, and I want to wish you luck in clearing your throat chakra and calling in your Viking sex god who sees you. Yeah. Maybe the four of us can go on a double date one day.
Oh, that'd be so lovely. Yeah, let's do it.
So good. I think you're going to have to come visit us in Mexico, though.
I'd love to. I'd love to. That sounds like a great trip.
Yeah, because the grasshoppers and butterflies are like, come on, girl, let's get it going. Your next spot is Mexico.
Oh my God, I love it. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
This is really fun. I think I might do this again. Three questions with SJ. It's nice because I can tell the stories, but it's a little bit easier on me because, to be honest, writing the stories and telling them in advance, I love doing that too. But this is a nice balance of two different ways, like preparing in advance and then receiving the questions.
Totally.
Well, look at me. I just received. Look at that.
Perfect.
Oh my goodness. Well, that is a perfect way to end the show.